I'm Nikki Nolan, and this is Matter of Life and Debt, a show about people in the United States and their student debt. Today's episode, Scam Education. I talk with Drew Buechler, a stand-up comic based in New York. As a self-described lover of scams, he attended not only one but two unaccredited art institutes, which left him with a large amount of student debt. In this episode, he describes his experience confronting his student loan payments, commuting from Philadelphia to New York for a job opportunity, and seeing his old school in an episode of Queer Eye as an Old Navy. This is his story. Welcome to the podcast! It's good to have you here. I'm really good at this.
It's the best intro to a podcast I've ever heard.
I brought you on here today to talk about student debt. So how much student debt do you have?
Well, first, that's a very personal and forward question right up front. But no, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. As soon as you told me you're doing up front, I'm like, that's 100% what I'm going to say. Anyway, no, I'm about $130,000 in debt, I think, is what the total ends up being. Yeah.
Are those private or federal loans?
Part federal, part private loans. A small majority of them are private, and then the bigger majority is federal loans.
Okay. And do you know the interest rate on your loans?
I think they all hover around 11 to 12%.
Shut the front door. What?
No, the front door is not shut. It's open. It's they're bad. The only time I ever heard my mom yell about interest rates was when I was talking about these loans and stuff like that. But that's the option I had, I guess, at the time, and they're very high interest rates from what I know, and I don't know very much. I went to school twice. I went to art institutes twice because I was like, I'm not done getting scammed yet, you know? Like, that's, I want to get scammed again. I was like, I just want to draw. Let's do it. Who cares about money? It's arbitrary. It's not arbitrary at all.
Fun fact, when you let young people make choices that is going to impact a significant portion of their life, they might not make the best choices.
And no, it's funny because it's like, you know, you're used to making minimum wage and your paycheck every week is like $100, $200. And then you're like, okay, so you're gonna have to borrow over 100. You're like, that's a made up amount of money. It's made up. It doesn't matter. That's not real. That's not a real amount of money. I saw it on Jeopardy, but they just wrote it. It's not real. Like, at all.
I feel like that's actually how the banks and the federal government treats it too. They're just like, whatever, it's just like a fake made up number that people owe us.
Yeah, and it's weird because student loans are weird too, because all other loans you can take out from your taxes and all this kind of stuff, and then like student loans, you're like, they're like, hey, only $2,500, I think, is the cap to claim on your taxes. There's a, like, at least in New York, there's like a certain amount that if you go over, it doesn't matter. You can only claim like a certain amount. I think the last time I heard it was like $2,500, but it might be more now. I'm not sure. They didn't talk about taxes one time at school. The only time I heard taxes when it was referred to in the Boston Tea Party, when they're like, we're not paying taxes. Your tea goes in the river. They're like, That's it. That was the only time I ever heard taxes. They treat it like it's like, oh, it's only a little bit of your paycheck. It's like all of it. It's there's so much of it.
Why don't they teach us how to do taxes? Yeah. Like other people in other countries know.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I love going to H&R Block, talk about it all the time. I know it's just me watching someone fill out TurboTax. Like, that's what I'm paying someone to do. But the thing is, I do it because I'm like, I'm going to make a mistake. I know I'm going to make a mistake, and I'm also going to be like too annoyed to like fix it. And then I'm going to be screwed. And I know that about myself. I know. And I also have a fun time at H&R Block. I have the best time. The first time I went in New York City to an H&R Block, there was an old woman standing in the middle of the store looking at the ceiling going, what happened here? Where's the music? And like, and I'm like, I'm never going anywhere else. That's...
You got like your entire comedy routine, just like go to H&R Block and material.
Yeah. One year a guy told me that his son, so I do visual effects for film and TV during the day. That's my like day job. And that was on my taxes. And this guy's kid was going to be an audio student or something. And he thought I could help him. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, like whatever, like I guess like just send your email, his email, and I'll help him out with anything I can. If we don't do audio, but like whatever. So yeah. Dude goes, I got this new job and I can hook you up, but I can't tell you what the job is. And I was like, okay, that seems weird that you got that. But so after I walk out of H&R Block, the guy follows me, tells me that he gave his son my email from our documents at H&R Block, which seems illegal. And then he hands me a card. He goes, this is my new side job. It's a really nice embossed card that says the Federal Secret Service. And I was like, what? your part-time job is the Secret Service? Can you even do that part-time? Like, it doesn't make any sense that you, like, it's like, during the day, I fill out tax returns. At night, I stop the president from getting shot. What?
Sounds like a really cool, you know, movie.
Yeah, listen, it could be. Maybe I'll write a screenplay about it. Anyway, I love H&R Block, not because they're good at taxes, because I love the people who work there and everyone who, the part of the experience. I love the experience of going to H&R Block.
Did you go this year? Like, yeah, with COVID?
I wore a mask the whole time, and I listened to a lady tell everyone what they did wrong. She was like in the back just going, you only made this much money. You got to pay that money. Like, you could have done something like 2 months ago if you would have done something about that money. But no, you didn't do nothing about that money. Like, just railing into people what they should have done. It was fun. And the thing is, like, I tried to do TurboTax once myself. And this is, again, why I don't do it. It said I owed like $7,000. And I lost it. I was like, I owe this money. I have to move back to my parents' house in Lancaster, PA, and I'm gonna have to work at Ruby Tuesdays for the rest of my goddamn life. And I had like a breakdown, and my friend was like, okay, clearly something's wrong. Like, and also you don't have to pay it all at once. You could pay it over time. It's like, and they said, do you make more money as a server than what you do now? And I said, no. they're like, then why would you go back to a lower paying job?
You're like, because that's my logic.
Yeah, my logic is that it goes to the worst case scenario. Yeah, you just go to these preposterous sides of like the world when the logical thing is just like one step over. You're like, oh, this makes sense if I think about it. Because you lose yourself in the emotion of what's happening. I think so, yeah.
So let's transition into what has been the impact of student debt on your life?
Well, obviously financial is like definitely a thing. And when you first got out of college, even that 6 month grace period they give you is like, you know, it's coming. They don't, I never really got any information about, I probably just didn't read it, but I didn't get really any information about or really understand how much per month I was going to have to pay. And then you're like, they're like, okay, 6 months over, give us $1,200 a month or something like that. I had multiple loans, so I had a lot of information everywhere. Like, I originally got them through Sallie Mae. They switched to Navient. I've had people sell my debt before too. This is a real messed up thing for a private loan to do. I got a private loan for one point, and I had a cosigner in that loan, and I was trying to get that cosigner off the loan, and they said you have to have a certain amount of payments in an order. I was 2 months away from getting that cosigner off the loan. They sold my debt to another company, and I called them and I said, hey, I was trying to get a cosigner off this loan. They said I had to do it in a certain amount of payments. And they said, well, since we bought your debt, that number has now gone back down to zero. So I have to go through a whole nother stretch of that thing to get this cosigner off my loan. Also, I didn't get any paperwork about this the cost. I went to go pay my loan 1 month and it said zero. And I was like, what? I was like, did I just win the lottery? Like, I thought I'm out of debt. I didn't even do anything. I don't know why people don't do this all the time. And I had to call like four people to then find out that my loans were sold to another company. So the thing is, the information is just spread out in a lot of places. And that stresses me out because I would rather it be in one place. I'd rather have one lump sum thing and all that kind of stuff. But it was a thing that was overwhelming. And then, but not just financially, but like, you know, emotionally. You're just sitting there going, all right, I have to pay this. I know I have to pay this. And then sometimes there's so much. And I was freelancing when I first started out and I was making like, all right. But when I graduated, I got a freelancing job right away. Mm-hmm. Worked for 9 months. This was in Philadelphia. They didn't have any more work and there's not really a lot of work for, I do visual effects for film and TV. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of that in there. So then I had to move to New York City, but I couldn't move because I had a lease in Philadelphia. So I actually commuted from Philly to New York on a bus every day for 10 months. And I did Megabus because it was the cheapest thing I could get. It was a 2.5 hour bus ride every day, one way. So it was 5 hours total during the day of commuting. No. And I would have gotten Amtrak, but they were like so expensive. And I mm-hmm. was barely making enough to pay rent, student loans, and then travel to a job. That was hard. That was definitely a harder point. And then, you know, I had some friends that moved up and I ended up getting to stay over the week and only had to commute once or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I finally, my roommate was like, oh, he's moving up too. So we just moved up together. So that was better. So that was good. But it was rough. And the thing is, obviously we take out loans and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, you want to get the thing. And I understand that you got to take stuff out to like pay for things and you do owe that money back. It was a lot. And there's not really any wiggle room in any capacity for it. Like there is like, you know, I feel like in the money I was making, I feel like they were not going to adjust my payments very much. And I think mm-hmm. I talked to one person once about it and they kind of were like, that's kind of the same. So if anything, you're going to maybe pay more by doing this, like, you know, your income based. Yeah. So I just didn't do that. And I was just trying to keep up with the payments. And there was definitely moments where I didn't pay them a couple months because I was just trying to like have any sort of savings to have anything mm-hmm. to fall back on. And I couldn't take another you can't always, like, after a while, like, asking your parents for money, you get that talk of, like, well, you need to respond. I just couldn't have that conversation anymore. So I just mm-hmm. was like, I'll just not pay something. And then that will get me out of that whole thing. And it was tough. That's tough for everybody. Yeah. And I think everyone can relate to that whole thing of just, like, of financial, but also stressing out about it. Because you stress out about, you're like, my payment, and you're also like on your own for the first time, and you know you're trying to figure that out, and it wasn't like a small amount of money. It wasn't like $100 mm-hmm. a month. I think my loans in general around $1,200 a month or something like that. Yeah. They've gone down a little bit since I started to try to like talk to the federal thing about the whole art institute thing mm-hmm. that's gone on for Brandon. So that's gone down a little bit. So that's helped me out a little bit in that regards. But there's still like $800. A month or something like that. If not, that's like the minimum of PIB.
And are you paying right now? Federal loans are paused. Are you still paying money on your federal loans?
No, not right now. Cause I found this place and I guess their whole thing is that they specialize in these like for-profit school loans, trickery stuff, whatever, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call it, scam things that they kind of make your case for you. And they put it to, so I'm actually, I did that at the beginning of the pandemic. Mm. So we're hitting about the 12 month place. And they said that my loans are in review for either dismissal or, and possible whatever. I hope, cross my fingers for that. Yeah, like reimbursement for the stuff I have paid. So like that would be cool. What's also cool about that is that they said that it also would, it would kind of take it off of your credit score too. Which would be amazing. Cause like, I also, yeah, it's just there. I also got a credit card young and didn't get that mm-hmm. whole thing. We all know that. I was like, the thing is I wanted to do for the thing. I bought tutorials for software. That was my credit card buy. I was like, I want to learn how to push these buttons. And
before YouTube.
Yeah. Before YouTube and all that stuff was like more free, but no, yeah, it's obviously it's stressful, not just financially, but emotionally as well, because you're just, it's not like, I was talking to my dad, he said he left college with like $5,000 worth of student loans, and he was like, but it's like, that money is so different now, and it's so mm-hmm. much more, and I think that's what people that complain, are like, oh, people complain about student debt, I'm like, yeah, because it's like a lot of money, it's a lot,
yeah.
it's not, it's, it's it's a good percentage of my monthly paycheck, like income is student loans for sure.
Yeah. And it is actually a pretty new thing. If you look at charts and things like that, it's increased in the last 10 years. I think it's increased 100% in student debt. So like, you're not alone. And I heard you say something that was interesting that like, you know, I hear this too. A lot of people are sort of like, it's your responsibility. You should pay it back. But no, actually, in a lot of other countries, and even in our country up until fairly recently, education was free or affordable. And so a lot of our shame comes from this idea like, oh, I made this choice and like this personal responsibility thing. And it's just not factual. Like, education should be something that is accessible, and it shouldn't be an upward mobility tax for people who just don't have the funds to go to it, like to be educated.
And just like, you know, like the whole like Trump University and the art institutes, they were targeting people that are they're not doing it to people who are well off. They're doing it to poor people. That's like they're specifically targeting those poor people. And the thing is, like, I feel like I don't want to complain too much, because I feel like everyone's like, oh, these kids are complaining about all this stupid stuff. And then in my mind, I'm like, I don't want to be that person. I'll just kind of like be quiet about it, because I'm just like, I definitely get that.
I mean, it is really hard, because you do have a lot of people who don't understand the situation and just see it as people complaining. But no, it is, student loans is a debilitating experience to go through. Like, I have paid off my student loans, and I have so much trauma. I know, but I have so much trauma from the experience of student loans that I've now dedicated enormous amounts of resources into understanding how we got here, why we're here, trying to help people, connect them to this company called the Debt Collective, which is a debtors union where they're unionizing to get people to like actually be able to have like collective power over a bunch of these things. And hopefully we'll get student cancellation, like federal cancellation, and then we'll go for private, and then free college for all. And that should be
Universities. Like, my friend got into a bike accident, and she got doored, as in like a person opened her door and she flipped over, and she messed up her shoulder. She had surgery on it, but she like ended up getting a settlement from it and paid off her student loans for it. And there was points of me, I'm just like, I was looking for doors. I was like, let me find a door. Progressive will take care of my student loans for me. Like,
so that is not the first time I've heard that. I have a really terrible story. I had a friend who both her parents died of COVID. And so she got a settlement from like the insurance company. All of the money from that went right to her student loans. It's sort of like, it's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, and the fact that it's like one of the first things that comes to your mind when you hear someone paid it off in this way, you're like, oh, well, maybe that could happen to me. It's like let me have something horrible happen, but then it'll come out like, and I won't have this stress in my life, because it is 100% stressful. And the thing is, like, if you don't make like one payment, they call you every moment of the day. I had a play. There was one. I think the times where I was in pain, I didn't pay 1 month, and they called me every hour, every day, for that next until I got back on the phone with them. And it was I get their whole need to get the loans, and like, again, like we said, I'm not trying to duck responsibility of something. I just like legitimately, I was like, I can't even afford to do this. I'm not gonna do that.
You can actually, you can answer the phone and say, I need everything. You need to stop communicating with me through a phone, and you have to write to me. So I will only accept communications through through letters. Ooh. Through the mail. So there is ways that like you can stop some of these harassment things.
Yeah, no, it's frustrating, because you have to think about that stuff, and you think of extreme, I already think of extreme logical reasons anyway, but like, it's 100% a thing that's burned on you, and when you know you're not paying it, you're just stressed out about it all the time. Even if it's like quiet stress, it's there for sure. And it does feel nice to call them and just get you back on track. Like that euphoria is a little nice, but you're still paying, and you're like, and I don't know, it's crazy.
It's a really terrible situation. The debt collectors actually has 100 people who are not paying right now. And then they also are like, that's through the debtors union. So they have 100 people not paying on purpose to be on strike. It's not for everybody, but the more people that we have like doing this collective action, we can put more pressure on politicians.
And it's all about numbers. It's a numbers game in that thing. And like, that's great. That's great to have people organized, and that's what you need. That's what you need to get anything done, because there's people that are lobbying for other stuff because they're doing things like to make money on people in that way.
Yeah. So you've been waiting 12 months. You haven't heard anything back about like if your loans are going to be canceled.
I just called them because I feel like there was a suspicious amount of time that I wasn't being contacted, and I knew it was going to be a thing. So like the initial thing is that you have to pay like money for them to like do the proceedings and stuff like that. So there's like an upfront cost to it. I think it was like $1,600 or something like that. I paid over a couple. I know it's a. I just keep giving people money. I don't know why.
Like, hey, wait, is this a scam? Like all of a sudden,
I actually tried to refinance my loans at one point, and I got in contact with a scam place, like a place that actually just took money from me. And they called me and they're like, hey, you haven't been pulling your loans. I was like, I'm pretty sure I refinanced them. And then the place was like a scam. It was, they just took my money every month.
Drew.
And I had to cancel a credit card. It was not good. It was not a credit card, but like a debit card and get a whole new thing. But it was that was scary. But this one, I looked up a little bit. They seemed to have like somewhat of a following, and also they were a lot more professional and kind of stuff for that kind of things. But I contacted them. They said it was in review, it's in review. And I called the Department of Education too. And they got back to me. They said that it's in review. So that makes me feel better about it. And so we'll see. They said it usually takes between 12 and 18 months. And they said the situation of just the art institutes in general are usually put through. They said they're pretty optimistic about it because of just like it's a known thing that they were targeting people, but also they're like, my school wasn't accredited. It turns out none of my stuff that I said I was getting credits for actually meant anything. Even between the two art institutes that I went to, because I went to two because, you know, let's do it. You know, those two stuff didn't transfer over. Like I had to take classes to make up for things I've already taken in other ones because they said they didn't, that the accreditation, and I'm like, you guys are in the same network. Also, it's fun to say that my school that I went to is actually now closed. It's no longer working. If you ever want to see it, you can watch the newest season of Queer Eye on Netflix. Uh-huh. They're in Philadelphia. There's an episode where they go into an old Navy, and that's where my school was. It's an old Navy now. And that was the gallery of my school that I went to. It is there now. They sold most of it to when they got sued and all that kind of stuff. But that's in the works right now. So hopefully I just called them. And they said that, you know, the Department of Education will contact me.
Fingers crossed. I'll have you back on the show once you have them canceled, because they're going to get canceled because like they are starting to actually do this. Like the borrower's defense process, basically like you were defrauded or if your college did something illegal, you can have your loans canceled. So people should definitely look up the borrower's defense process, fill out the form, start like getting your stuff ready so that you can hopefully get them canceled that way.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing is, like it's good to have a pretty public lawsuit happen on your school. If that's that's pretty helpful, it makes you feel good about it. But the thing is,
it makes you
feel good that you chose the right school. You know, like people are like, oh yeah, I go to Harvard. I'm like, well, go to one that like will not give you a good education. How about that? But the thing is, like that whole thing was more that I just wanted to do what I wanted to do and that kind of stuff. But the school like very much didn't care, and you could, there was, they were trying to get accreditations where they couldn't, they were doing reviews. Mm-hmm. They tried to do, and I remember them not getting them while I was in school and all this kind of stuff. And then that made me feel like I was like, I didn't go to a good school, but you know, I made the best of my situation. And the people that I befriended were just about learning. So we did a lot of our own education in that way. But so that was good. That's a good part of the thing
Yeah.
Not to be all Debbie Downer on the school, but this, yeah. But yeah, if it's really that's like, it doesn't matter where you go, is if you have the right mindset and you have you can find some people that are in a similar mindset, you can do whatever you want. And everyone in my friend group is pretty successful in that state of things. So it's cool. It worked out for that way, but yeah. There's a lot of people that it didn't work out for. And and the fact that also that they were selling a product that wasn't what they were actually trying to sell you, that telling you they were selling you, yeah, is the problem, really, more than anything.
Oh, I feel like this is a good point to transition. I want to know more about you.
Okay, it was a lot of different turns.
Let's go through some of these turns.
I actually found it's funny. So I when I would watch movies, I would want to stuff that the people in the movie. I saw Jurassic Park. I wanted to be a paleontologist, and I read all the books on dinosaurs and all that kind of stuff, and I guess everyone's done that. But then I saw Twister. I wanted to chase and study tornadoes for a while. I thought it was really cool. I didn't really know what I was doing. And honestly, what set me on the track of something was, so I was in learning support all through school. Third grade is when I was in it, to 12th grade, kind of. And it was for reading, writing. And, you know, you go through that whole thing. They're not really about you finding what you're good at. They're really about getting you through school. They're not really you. I had to take a graded study hall in high school because they were like, you need this structured time. And I'm like, I had a study hall right before this. Like, essentially they wouldn't let me take electives. I had to just take these graded study halls that they would just check your agenda book if you wrote it, and you would do like an assignment in there, and then you got an 8 out of 8 for the day.
It was
supposed to be an easy A so you could pass or whatever.
Yeah.
And that was so rough. The last year, because I was like, I want to get into college. I don't want to just be another thing. Mm-hmm. I know I have to take. I was going to my junior year of high school.
Yeah.
I was like, I need to take a language. I need to take a language. I know English hasn't worked out, but maybe Spanish will be better. You know. But I was like, because that's all I heard is like colleges. You know, you have to have well-roundedness. That's all you hear in movies and stuff. Yeah. So that's all I knew. I was like, I want to take this. I don't want to be in an especially. I want to be at my level English class. I want to make sure that I can do it. And they kind of were like, but they let me do it.
Yeah.
So the next year I take Spanish. I had the hardest time in the world. I studied for five or 6 weeks ahead of time for the midterm. I got a 27% on the midterm. I was like, hola and adios. You know, like, so I dropped out. Mm-hmm. Of that class, and I took an art class, which I wasn't allowed to take any sort of elective, so I didn't know anything else besides just the standard education stuff.
Yeah,
and I had the best time doing that, and I felt so like it felt good because I was kind of okay at it, like at first, like, and then the next year I went to a VoTech for commercial art.
What's so a it's VoTech? Like
a so it's like a it's a technical high school kind of okay. thing. So they do a lot of the stuff is like teaching trades. So it's okay, like they have like a plumbing electrician. They have like there's like a cosmetology school. But then they had stuff for like photography. And the thing I did was called commercial art. So it was supposed to be like graphic design kind of stuff. And I remember I just got there and I just was like, boom. Like this is like, I knew I was in it. I knew I was like something in this realm is something I'm going to be good at. Cause I was like, it was doing stuff and opposed to having to like, and I just, it was easy. Not easy, but you kind of got the concept of it right away, which has never happened in school. I was like, okay, I'm going to go for some sort of graphic design. I like graphic design, but I like this kind of, I like making things too. I also like editing. I did a little bit of editing there too. And so I went to, I found a school for, it was called, it was like digital design or something like that.
Okay.
But it was a cross between graphic design, web design, and interactive design.
Oh.
And all this kind of stuff. So I was like, oh, cool. So the whole part is like you use the graphic design stuff to make templates and you could do motion graphics things, but also had camera. It was kind of the best of all worlds, mm-hmm. the kind of a generalist kind of look at it. Loved that. It was cool. I went there for a sped up associate's degree, which was a year and a half or something like that.
That was your first stint in institutes?
And it was funny because it was called Bradley Academy for the Visual Arts. And then they got into the Art Institute thing as I graduated, and I was the first graduate of the Art Institute of York, Pennsylvania. And I had to call it that, and I was so mad. I was so mad because I called it Bradley all the time, but it was not that anymore. So I worked in a graphic design place for 4 months. I was kind of an intern. Mm-hmm. It was kind of I didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to like it. And it was kind of – and I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I was like – it was nothing. It was like stuff for like mini marts and my boss was kind of mean at the time too. So I was kind of looking at other stuff to do. And I went to tour the Art Institute of Philadelphia. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay. Because I also looked at a Full Sail University Florida. They had a campus. And I remember the one guy, because I was looking at filmmaking, because I was like always mm-hmm. interested in film. And I honestly, all the examples of what I wanted to do when I was younger just all came from film.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that makes sense. And I love it so much. And so I was looking at that. And they wanted me to go down. They're like, Full Sail was like, you know, Amanda Bynes walks around the campus all the time. And I'm like, okay, like that's not really an education thing, but that's kind of cool, I guess. And also, like at that time, like Amanda Bynes was like in the kind of lull before no one really heard from her for a while. And I guess she's still making stuff. But before I went to tour there, I went into the Art Institute and I was wearing a Flash Gordon t-shirt because I loved the movie Flash Gordon. And I was walking down the hallway and a guy, I just went to the seminar for the film thing. And it was essentially mm-hmm. like, they're like, oh, we'll train you to film weddings is kind of like what they were kind of doing. Mm-mm. So I walked down, this guy says, oh man, that shirt's awesome. Like Flash Gordon is the greatest movie ever. And I was like, yeah, it's so cool. Right. Like I love it. And he's like, are you going to come into this presentation? I was like, oh, I didn't even know what there's a presentation. And he goes, oh, this is for the visual effects, motion graphics major here. And I was like, oh, cool. I'll check it out. And I went in. I left. I was like shaking. I was like, this is what I'm freaking doing. Like, I was like sold at that point. And I went through there, met some good friends. We all did things. We had, you know, ups and downs through there. Left, got a freelance gig working on.
And just to catch up, it was that happened at the Art Institutes.
These are all the Art Institutes. Yes. Yeah, no, yeah. I was like, I don't want to move, take out more loans for that. Because and the thing is, when I went to the Art Institute of Philadelphia, I was commuting from Lancaster, PA to Philadelphia. Did a lot of commuting in my day.
Yeah, I was about to say, you really seem to like scams and commuting.
Yeah, yeah. It's my two passions in life are both of those things. And the thing is, so I went to a place, started working on a show for NBC called Do No Harm that no one will remember because it was one season and it was bad. And then worked on, you know, the M. Night Shyamalan movie After Earth, which is it's a bad one. It's
okay.
Jane Smith for an hour going, I don't know. Yeah. But so then I went to New York and was where I worked at a company there for 3 years, did a bunch of stuff, then moved to another company that I'm at right now. Been here for four or five years now.
Oh.
We worked on like Marvel's Iron Fist and Defenders and all that kind of stuff. We did all the glowing fist effects for the first season of Iron Fist and Defenders. We didn't do the second season, but it was cool. We worked on all that. It was really cool because it was awesome. I was feeling good. I feel really good about it. And then all of a sudden, midway through that whole experience, I started doing comedy because people told me I was looking for something outside to do another kind of like, you know, creative thing, you know, to just kind of keep my, you know, creative juices flowing because you got to have outlets because even in creative fields, you're kind of doing someone else's stuff. You're not really doing your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And enough people told me I was funny and that I was at an open mic once and I went there, tried it, and was like, I'm in this. Because like we were talking about earlier, I think even before the podcast, is just like how we're like writing's really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I write so much more now because of comedy. And I have to like actually do it and figure out the words. It's actually helped me get over that a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm still really bad at it, but it's like, it's a thing that I have to like force to write it down to get the word economy down and stuff like that.
Yes.
And it's kind of a weird place that I thought I would never think I would be in writing anything, and I'm writing a lot now. It's cool, and I love doing it. I'm only like 3 or 4 years in, and just trying to do everything I can for that and working. And what's cool is that they've overlapped a little bit ago. The last 2 years, I hosted the New York Visual Effects Society Awards, and I got to write jokes for that. And it was cool because it was all inside jokes about our jobs that I don't get to do anywhere else because no one else gets them. And what's cool about that is the LA one is hosted by Patton Oswalt, and this one is hosted by me. So that's my connection to him if I ever meet him.
You're going to. It's just going to happen. You're going to be like the next. I was going to name someone, and then I'm like, it's scary to name comics because people are getting picked off for doing things. So I'm like, I'm not going to name someone.
Keep it very vague, and I'll be that person.
Oh, boy. Well, so now you're doing comedy and visual effects as your day job. So what, we're getting close to the end. So what advice would you give your younger self knowing all of this knowledge that you know now?
Figure out a better student loan thing. But I would say that, you know, don't change much. Just, you know that you do follow what you want to do. Do your research like you're doing. It's going to pay off eventually. I feel like I did a lot of stuff right. I did a lot of wrong stuff, but I don't know if I would change the wrong stuff because it made the right stuff better.
Interesting.
In that way. Like, I kind of like the mess ups of life because they kind of reflect, you appreciate the better times and your hard work through the whole thing. Because I think, I don't know about you, but like just having dyslexia and these learning disabilities, it's made me a lot harder of a worker. And I think that's because you had to work harder. And I know the way I learn is I engross myself in whatever I'm doing. And then it may take me longer to get to the end result, but I'm going to get there. When I get it, I get it, and I go hard on it because I use my time, all the stuff I've, I don't think a lot of people do large amounts of research about things, but I research a lot.
Yeah.
And when I'm doing the thing I'm doing, I can pull on that research a lot more. And I think I've always kind of done that. And I think I stopped doing that at one point. So my only advice to myself would be don't stop doing that.
Yeah.
Always kind of go at it. Yeah.
Love that. Is there anything you want to pitch?
I guess my podcast is Drew Want to Know. We talk about comedy, and it's kind of, I'm going to change the format up a bit because I'm going to start talking about comedy and anything else. I think it's very, and honestly, and you said you've watched it, but anyone who has not watched it, I really just started it because I had a good name and a great theme song.
It's a great theme song. It's, this morning, it was stuck in my head, and I was just like, oh, God, Drew. Yeah,
exactly. And my friend had a good Alanis Morissette impression. I was like in it. And then also, I guess, check out Judah Friedlander's shows that he does. Follow him on Instagram. I host those shows a lot, and we also do our own, I have my own Zoom show called Chirping Bird Comedy. We do on every Monday at 8 on Zoom, or you can watch on Comedy Hub on Twitch is there too. And Judah's on there every week. So, you know, you get a little piece of Judah there, and then you can watch his hour and a half stuff that he does privately, which is pay what you want. It's like as low as $1. So it's a good deal. And I host those a lot, and I think I'm doing a couple coming up soon. So yeah. Check out his because he's great and he's a cool guy anyway. So
I'll put everything on the website to all your stuff. Yeah. Because yeah. I think especially now, like the comedy has really gotten me through things. Like Judah's show, looking forward to like seeing Judah's show every week, which I go to like almost every week. It just like makes this pandemic experience feel a little more human. And if I hadn't gone, I wouldn't have met you.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, it's weird how many people get connected and that kind of stuff. And also, like, I'll tell you this, I didn't really know Judah before the pandemic, and now I know him a lot more. And that's like a huge thing too. So somehow the pandemic's been really good, and in that way, and all that kind of stuff. But I've very much been pumped about all the pluses and bummed about all the negatives. But no, they're great shows, and they definitely help people. And there's a really fun community with his shows too.
Yeah. Because
it's like, there are a lot. I feel like when you were at the end of the show, when I was talking to you about this podcast, when you mentioned this podcast, I feel like you were talking to people that you knew from the show. And you're like, how you doing, girl? And you're like, and she's like, oh, good. We're going good. Everyone seemed to know, like if the chats in those shows are really cool, and it's a cool community of people, and it's like all over the world, and it's just like everyone seemed to know each other, and it's fun to be a little bit of a part of that, to be honest. It's cool, and it's fun to do them, and hopefully keep doing them more. It'd be cool.
Well, we've come to the end. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And this is fun.
Matter of Life and Debt is produced by me, Nikki Nolan. Special thanks to F.A. Ackman for creating the music and mastering the audio. Additional support and thanks to Emma Klauber, who writes the information and transcripts about each episode. This podcast would not be possible without them. Visit our website for more information, matteroflifeanddebt.com, where you can listen, read transcripts, get additional context of the subjects you just heard about, subscribe absolutely for free. That website again, matteroflifeanddebt.com. Thanks again for listening.